Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
What's going on, Modern Nation? I am Anthony Salome, live with Alex Nicholas for another episode of the Rush Podcast here. October 19, 2016. Championship Series in baseball fully underway. So season for the minors halfway done, coming off the bye week. Basketball season pretty much here, right around the corner. What else you got?
So how did you enjoy your bye week besides taking off your shirt and cheering for the Dallas Cowboys?
I liked not having to worry about what was going to happen with my minors. Hold up. Listen.
El Chingon
IPA.
Oh,
you like that?
That's
cool,
okay.
Huh?
You just wanted to impress me. That's all you wanted. Cheers. I got the Brombre Black Ghost is pretty good.
There's plenty of different choices in there. Yeah, man. You know, hey, hopefully it was a week that was beneficial to the team, that allowed them to get healthy, that allowed them to kind of gain their bearings again, get their feet underneath them again. Obviously, there's injuries throughout. You know, one of the biggest ones is Alvin Jones.
Aaron's been banged up too,
but, you know, Alvin Jones is huge for that defense, and he's been banged up all season just about. And, you know, hopefully this bye week did them well, and they were able to kind of recover from those injuries. And, I mean, I don't want to say it's a new season because nothing's really changed just yet, but, hey, Ryan Metz is back, right, as far as he's cleared to play. And, where do we go with that?
I mean, it's like – you don't even want to go back and talk about the first half of the season because we already know.
Well, we played 16 turns?
Yeah, real quick. And a 1-5 start. I mean, we all know what's going on with them. We're struggling up front. You're struggling in the passing game. Defensively, finally, the dam broke the past 2 weeks, you know, going up against FIU. The dam finally broke. You know, we talked about how good they played in the past 2 weeks, you know, before the bye. So you go in with negative thoughts, you know, into the bye week. It was a dark place for a lot of UTEP fans. And you just imagine what these players and coaches were feeling like. But, you know, you talk about, you know, how the bye week is beneficial. You know, I want to start off today with what Sean Coogler was talking about on Monday, which, you know, Sean Coogler, there's a lot of coaches speak that gets thrown around. And Sean Coogler does it as well. But there's some times where I know he's spitting the truth.
Yeah.
Like, where he's really trying. You know, you hear it all the time. We've heard coaches speak from different coaches that coach at UTEP. We all know who we're talking about. And, but the first thing, obviously, was he said they're getting healthy. And that was important because he I didn't know that Geno Breslin was beat up. So he mentioned him. He mentioned Darren LaFosse because the guy that I kind of called out in my midseason report card, not getting carries. Well, it turns out he's been banged up. You know, he's talking about the Jones brothers being back. That was number one. That was good to see that was a priority because it's not, you know, everybody has injuries, but this UTEP team doesn't have that much developed depth where an injury to a guy like Alvin Jones is going to just hurt you at linebacker. A guy with Darren LaFosse isn't 100%. They're not going to. That's why they haven't used the fullback that much in the running game. So it's good to see that get accomplished healthy. But the next thing that really, really jumped at me, and I think overall, I mean, we've all talked about the issues with the passing game, da da da. We just went over that. But the biggest thing that Sean Coogler talked about was the lack of energy. And it was so evident when they played FIU. When FIU was jumping around up and down in the sidelines, hyped up, ready to go. Mind you, this is a team that's 1-4. They lost their head coach. They were they got mobbed the week before they were able to squeak out that win against FIU. But they looked like a team that was coming in here winning, trying to go for the conference championship. And UTEP all year has just kind of been that methodical in the pregame. I'm always down on the field. I like that in the pregame. I like to go down there. And the energy, he hit it right on the head. So to me, that was very, very good to see him just recognize that. And I mean, you've gone to games too compared to the last couple of years where you see that energy on the sideline, you see that kind of brotherhood or whatnot that they preach, that kind of went away. And yeah. And that's not saying that that's all going to cure everything, but that's a good point, and it shows how they're really, really looking down, not just that, oh well, we're only running the ball 2.5 yards per carry, this and that, but noticing that little stuff that really leads to wins. And that's good to see the cooler to come out and really say that. That's something you can keep in-house or whatever. But for him to really go into detail and say that, I thought that was very, very, I don't know how you can say anything as positive in a 1-5 season, but it's just encouraging to see maybe there will be some improvement.
Yeah, I mean, you hope that's the case. But things still have to translate on the football field, and we just haven't seen it from the play calling, from the production, the offense to – you know, even the defense, we've praised them quite a bit, but obviously, like you mentioned against FIU, the dam finally broke.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's just been so many issues. The injuries have definitely piled up and affected it. But, you know, I just don't understand. Well, I shouldn't say I don't understand, but I don't see how this thing gets turned around at this point. I don't see how the ship gets righted at this point. It's, you know, especially to come off a bye week, you head out of town, going to play UCSA. That's a game where it seems like since we've played them three years now, right? It just seems like the winner of that game, every time we've played them, it has just controlled the game. Like it hasn't really been like, you know, there hasn't been a close game between us yet.
Nope.
You know, the first year they came in, we thought, oh, we're gonna take care of them here in El Paso. And they came in here and they beat us by like 21 or something, 34-13 or whatever that was.
Easily.
I don't remember what happened year two last year, right? Was the shutout year or was that year two?
No, year two. Yeah.
Okay, year two was over there. We had the shutout. But it just seems like every year, you know, it's the team that wins has complete control of the game. And if you look at what's happening right now heading into this game, if you would have asked me 4 or 5 weeks ago, I would have thought UTEP would be the team that had the opportunity to go in there, you know, after the opening games and whatnot, you know. But UTSA is quietly strung together a little 3-3 run to start the season, 2-1 in conference play. So they're a team that's in a much better place than the Miners right now. So, you know, you talk about what's going on, you know, off the field and trying to get this team right, but I haven't seen it translate on the field, and I just don't understand. I don't see what is going to change things to make that translate to on the field production.
Let's get to that, to my next point on. I don't know if this is going to change anything. I just like the fact that this is something that we haven't heard before, and this is something that the next thing he talked about, they're toning down the physicality and the competition in practice because they were trying to play easy, you know, not trying to avoid injuries and whatnot. And I'm just looking at this from a player's perspective, from being on a football team. Like that, when I played at Andrus, we always would say some of our best games were our practices. Cause I mean, we were stacked, bro. And we would just go at each other because we knew what to play with. I mean, you know what I mean? We've been in the program 2-3 years and those practices were crunk as hell, bro. I'm talking about coming home bruised, but then on Friday night, you know, just mopping cats and not even having competition. I think that is something that I can relate to when Cougar talks about, you know, because when I went to the couple of practices this year, it wasn't as physical or wasn't as grinding as it was the first couple of years of practice. I mean, they toned it down to Cougar dropping F-bombs, you know what I'm saying? Like, so that is something that's very noticeable. And like you said, at this point, it seems like, yeah, throwing the towel, whatever. But I just think that I continue to feel like Sean Coogler just has that mental know-how. Even though he's shown the X's and O's part, he's still behind as a head coach. But just these little adjustments like that could spark something because there is a lack of energy. I think also there might be a small lack of leadership on this team too in certain areas when the game gets down or, you know, when things have gone bad, you just don't see that vocal leader. I saw Darren LaFossa for the first time last weekend on the sideline. I could really say, okay, well, there's somebody getting vocal. I hadn't seen that. You know, and you don't need a rah-rah guy all the time, but you need guys to step up and take accountability. And Ryan Metz could be that guy offensively. But once again, we just don't know, coming off this bye week with so many issues and running into a buzzsaw, like could be a buzzsaw UTSA team that's really, really improving. And by the way, we're going to have Jared, our boy from Underdog Dynasty, going to come on at 6:20 and spit a little road running knowledge. But I mean, it's just at this point, it's like we don't even want to see this miraculous 5-1 turnaround and whatever, all these dreams. It's just like at this point, we just want to see just progression with the young guys that he talked about promoting up and this new, whatever he wants to call it, of personnel adjustments, changes that they're going to make. Do you just want to see improvement out of that just to find some kind of identity? Is that kind of what UTEP may be just playing for at this point, just to salvage some type of identity, maybe even going forward, and hell, maybe even going on a string and winning 3 or 4 games and making something interesting later.
Yeah, I mean, for me, we're starting to talk about Sean Coogler's job status here at UTEP. You know, that's what the rest of this season is about. Because we're sitting at 1-5, so bowl game is just about out of the picture. So you can almost close the door on that. Yeah. You know, but if you're gonna buy into what this guy is selling for the next 2-3 years to give him that much longer, you know, you've got to see something. You've got to see something from this team. You've got to see him show the ability to turn things around, to have the stamina to be able to withstand, you know, injuries and a slow start and some bad games and be able to overcome that, get his team to come back and perform, produce in the second half of the season and win some games. You know, I'm not saying 6-6 or anything like that, but hey, if you can get to 4-8, you know, you finish 3-3 or
take care of your home game.
Take care of your home games. You finish 3-3 or maybe possibly 4-2 in the last 6. You know, that's something that you can build on going into next year. It's not the result that we wanted coming into the year, but it's something that you can use to kind of grow from. But again, you know, for me, this is about Sean Coogler's future here. Now, you know, you talk about him, you know, still kind of having that, like he's pulling out all the stops.
Yeah.
He's trying to do the right thing. Maybe he is, maybe he's not. I mean, I don't even know where we're at with this coach anymore, to be honest with you. To me, pulling out all the stops is saying what I've been trying to do is not working. And I'm not trying, you know, one of the main things that Sean Coogler wanted to do when he came in here was build up our lines, you know, get things going right in the trenches and get these guys, you know, bring some big guys, boys that can push people around on the line. That's great. That's great. But this whole ground and pound, smash mouth football, we don't have the guys for that.
We might not ever.
Yep. You know, you can do that kind of stuff if you're Alabama.
Yep.
You know, but you're not gonna do that here at UTEP. And at least you're not gonna have consistent success doing that. And what sucks is this year should be the eye opening year for Sean Coogler to finally realize that when coming in you had a lot of promise. You know what I mean? The team was. You know, a lot of people expected more than this from them, especially where Aaron Jones is at in his career. You know, you really expected them to be able to compete more than they have. But even more than just competing, Aaron Jones and the run game hasn't even gone the way that we had expected and hoped for. So, again, you know, if any time were a time for a coach to realize that what he's doing is wrong and how I always like to go to that shoving that square peg in the round circle, you know, it's right now. Like you're 1-5 and things are not working. And yet we continue to see the same game plan and offensive scheme every single week for the last 4 years. And I just, you know, if starting 1-5 and getting mopped by Army and then followed up by Southern Miss and then followed up by, you know, if all these teams getting mopped by all these teams isn't enough proof, then I don't know what is for Sean Coogler. You know, because there's being smart and sticking to your guns, you know, and then there's just being flat out stubborn. And to me, Sean Coogler right now is stubborn. He's the kind of guy that's like, nah, I'm going to do it my way, even if his way is not working. And you know, again, going back to it, the second half of the season is about his job and what's going to happen in the future. And if what we've seen from him the last 4 years is any sign, he's not going to change anything. He's going to continue to try to do things the way that he's doing it. And the season's going to end 2-10, 3-9. And honestly, he should be out of here. He should be out of here because that's I mean, it's unacceptable at this point.
Fire.
By his own standards, by his own, you know, what he said. And this is 4 years.
He's a writings on the week.
This is 4 years, okay?
Yeah.
What he said was 3 years. He said, if I don't have this thing righted in 3 years, I'm out. I'll walk. You know what? Nobody held him to that after year three. Granted, I mean, he did okay. They showed some signs in the second half of the season. The defense played fairly well. But you come into year four and then you lay an egg? You know, how long do you get on your own – for your own standards, how long do you get?
Yeah, I think he sees the writing on the wall. Like, exactly what he said after that last FIU game. Like, he was like – he self-acknowledged it, basically. You know, he knows the ramifications. And You know, to me, like I told some people, it ain't about the money with Sean Cougar. I mean, this guy is well known. I mean, we're not dissing the guy saying he can't coach. He's a hell of a position coach.
Yeah,
he
yeah,
can
definitely.
Go and he can be a special teams coordinator of the NFL and make more money in a 3-year period than he could in a 2-year period. So giving up $1 million, in my opinion, speaking for him, but just giving our shout outs here, I mean, our thoughts here, I mean, you know, that isn't the issue, you know, and I think he's as much as he loves UTEP, as much as you can kind of tell that he's a prideful guy. He's not going to – I don't think Sean's the type of guy that's going to sit here and just get his ass kicked.
No,
like,
he's not.
I really don't think – and that's and, you know, it's easy for us to come out there and call his job, call for his head, whatever.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? That, I think that's what we're saying. It's like this guy understands the situation. He understands what UTEP football is and how hard it is to build it. And you know, now you're going back – I look back at – reading people's messages on message boards. I go back to the 90s where they tried that ground and pound crap with the David Lee era, even early on in the Gary Nord era. And then when was UTEP successful, had any success when they ran the spread? When has any G5 team, when have you heard of any group of five team just besides, I mean, you can maybe say Boise to a point, but they still had a really good passing
game.
They've always had great quarterbacks. They've always had a dynamic type offense where Brent Peace, where that at, bro?
And,
you know what I mean? So basically what we're trying to say is in the group of five level, you got to be able to spread the ball out. You got to be able to put some speed on the field. An air raid offense, you don't necessarily need 2-3-star guys. You know, you just need guys that understand route concepts, and you need a quarterback that's competent. And you just haven't – that's another thing, too. Outside of Jameel Showers, I mean, and Jameel Showers wasn't spectacular by no means. Had a couple of very good games. The UTSA game comes out to me a couple of years ago. But outside of that, I mean, the quarterback position has probably been – the worst has been at UTEP, in the, maybe even before Sean Cougar got here.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Things have really regressed. You look at the stats on the defensive side of the ball now. You know, everything is basically falling down outside of the top 100. When you talk about scoring defense, rushing defense, passing defense, total defense, it's tough, man. Obviously, the passing game hasn't been there, so I'm sure our passing offense is outside of the top 100. Scoring offense is up. I mean,
you
look across the board at everything with this team right now, and it's struggling, man. It's a
recruiting
program that's struggling. And you know, it's funny because my pops kind of posed the question, and I heard it. I've heard it in other places too. And he was like, "Do you think it's time for UTEP to just drop down divisions?" Like, we heard this out of, you know, when we were talking about New Mexico State a few years back, you know, everybody was talking about should they go to FCS, you know, and now it's kind of sad that question is even being asked about UTEP. Now, for me, regardless of how bad things are getting, it makes absolutely zero sense to drop down. But I'm just saying, like, just the fact that question is being asked, you know, saying that we cannot compete at this level. Like,
and
that's
crazy, because think about it, like 10 years ago about 10 years ago, when we're packing 40,000 for Houston or packing 40,000 for Rice, and we're putting up points, and our defense giving up points, but Quentin Demp's out there picking – you know what I mean? Where it's like – and that's why I say no, because Mike Price showed a glimpse of the beast that could be UTEP football. And I said it to somebody else. I think I don't know who I said it to last week, but I was like, the two things that are going to bring El Paso fans back out to the Sun Bowl is going to be high-flying offense and a winner.
Yep.
Honestly.
And they go hand in hand.
And not saying that Mike Price was this offensive juggernaut, because it was what, maybe a 2-3-year window where the offense was really, really good. You know, the Higgins days kind of fell off a bit.
We talked about Mike Price a lot, you know, and that guy is man, I was a huge Price supporter, as I've said many times. You can go back and listen to the podcast. I never wanted that guy to be fired in the first place. I understood why he needed to go. But what he did here, he elevated the expectations of the program. People felt what it was like to actually – we cracked the top 25, man. And I know we did that back in the 2000 day when we had Rocky Bet. Was it Rocky Perez? And, you know, Brian Atkin and those guys.
But that team overachieved, because
they really did overachieve. And that was like Gary Nord's one good year. But, you know, you have Mike Price, who elevated this program to a point where – man, we were scoring points, and we had guys being drafted into the NFL.
People were excited about it. People rock gear everywhere. Like,
it's just not there anymore. We've lost that. And it's like you said, there's only two ways to bring it back, and it's with a high-flying offense and with wins. And I think they go hand in hand, and Sean Coogler has brought neither of those things so far.
It's like the NFL. I mean, it's one thing to do it in the NFL where everybody's sort of equal in a sense. I mean, of course, you have stronger teams, but, you know, a perfect example is like the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, their offense is so basic right now, but that, yeah, go grab that. You know what I'm saying? Ah, I had to throw a jab at him. But, yeah, I mean, it's definitely getting down to that point where it's going to – I mean, it's already been brought up. If it hasn't been brought up about Sean Coogler, I mean, it's been brought up all over social media. But
I missed that. I had to grab my hat real quick.
That's a clean cap. I mean, if they had a Raider emblem, my rocket, but either way, moving on.
We should talk about the Cowboys, though. That's a good topic to talk about right now. 5-1, also on the bye week. We should just change this.
Look at the
time. We should just change this up. Instead of talking about Utah sports, we should talk about Cowboys.
Look at the time. I got to go. But anyway, so game seven for UTEP, UTSA. Talk a little bit about UTSA for Jared. Calls us up a little bit, previewed a little bit. I mean, this has been a surprising stretch for the UTSA Roadrunners, coming out, you know, winning their past two games in what I think is impressive fashion, coming out and just mobbing Southern Miss at home, putting up 28-7. I mean, they scored.
Completely unexpected.
Yeah.
I could see the 14-13 win at Rice.
Yeah.
You know, I could see that from UTSA. The 55-32 mopping of Southern Miss, I did not see that coming at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe we should have seen it. We go back 4 weeks, and they're at ASU. I don't know if you watched that game. I think it was like Thursday night or something like that. But ASU was coming off a big win over Texas Tech at home, where they scored like 60 points or something. And all of a sudden, ASU gets held to 28 against UTSA or 32 and almost loses. You know, that we should have known, I guess. We should have known. But joining us now is Jared Kalmus, coming on from Underdog Dynasty, our SB Nation sister site that covers a variety of sports and teams across the G5 nation, but definitely specializes in UTSA sports. Jared, what's going on with you tonight, man?
Hey guys, what's going on? Thanks for having me on. It's always a highlight of the season for the UTEP week. I know we're going to get a great radio show in, so I'm excited for it.
Hell yeah, man. So UTSA is sitting at 1-3. Let's go back a couple weeks. UTSA is hitting back 1-3. You're showing signs on defense, showing little signs in the rush game. And all of a sudden, after a bye week, Frank Wilson does something, infuses something into this team, come out, bam, smash Southern Miss, come out and play rock solid defensively and let Rice beat themselves instead of imploding yourselves. I mean, what is it coming out of that bye week? What do you think Frank Wilson has done to just energize everything and just make this UTSA team look like a contender, not only for a bowl, but in a wide open CUSA West?
Yeah, you know, you guys were talking about this earlier in the podcast with what Coogler is trying to get on at UTEP during their bye week, but I think it was the competition during that bye week at UTSA that really changed things around. We saw in the Old Dominion game they switched up the offensive line after an injury. Austin Pratt moved from left guard to center, and then they brought Kyle McKinney in at left guard, who had played a whole bunch in the previous season. And that offensive line looked really great. They went to the bye week after that game, and they went with that offensive line. You know, they had some position battles. And since that offensive line has been starting at UTSA, it's been night and day difference. I mean, the pass protection is phenomenally better. You know, the run game we saw against Southern Miss, where there were huge holes. I think there was a 90-yard run and like an 85-yard run or something like that. So the holes are getting created now. We've seen changes on the other side of the ball as well. Some of the freshmen, you can tell, have gotten really coached up. And I think the bye week really showed us what this new UTSA staff is capable of. You know, they had some time out to work on the fundamentals with the young guys, and we saw the huge improvement. It happened really fast. UTSA is a much different team than they were 3 weeks ago.
Talk about the play of Dalton Stern coming out, completing almost 65% of his passes. You know, the yards don't jump off the board at you as someone else at 11,
he don't make mistakes.
But he doesn't make mistakes. You know, 10 touchdowns, only 3 interceptions. Been on point pretty much all season long. Talk about that play and what he's meant to this team.
Yeah, you know, there's two things with Dalton that are pretty crazy. First of all, no one expected him to start the season.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there was maybe me and a couple of other people that were kind of holding out hope that he was going to hold on to the job, but it was pretty much considered a done deal. They graduate transfer Jared Johnson. He was Southland Conference Player of the Year at Sam Houston. It seemed pretty obvious the guy was going to get the job. You know, they brought him in for a reason. Dalton beat him out, and he hasn't done anything to lose that job. You know, you can tell that the staff really wanted to give Johnson all the chances in the world to take the spot. They kept putting him in, And, I mean, every time Dalton was challenged, he just rose up and became a better player. And the other thing that's crazy about Dalton's performance is this is not even the type of offense that he's built for. You know, he's more of a spread offense type of guy. He's got a decent arm, and we've seen him make some really long passes this year. But, you know, he's not a typical pro-style quarterback. You know, he's a dual-threat guy that he's good on the intermediate routes. But he's adjusted quite well. And, you know, he's done the play action perfectly. And he's played within himself. Yeah, he's only has 3 interceptions this year. And, you know, he got lucky on a couple should-be interceptions that were dropped. But still, you're looking at 4 or 5 interceptions, even if the defender would have came down with the ball. And, I mean, that's a great number. And, you know, it's good efficiency for UTSA, and it's keeping them in ball games.
Jalen Rose is a guy that, for the past couple of years, I've seen this guy and I'm like, damn, he gets one block, he gets one crease, he's gonna cut and go. And you saw glimpses of the past couple of years. Now, him and Jarvion Williams to me are almost like clones back there. How much has his emergence been because of the offensive line? And I mean, has that been kind of that X factor that teams obviously are gonna prepare for? But if he's hitting home runs and so is Jarvion, I mean, UTSA can pretty much do whatever they want mixed in with the play action.
Right. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And, you know, Jarvion's been struggling with the ankle injury throughout the season. I think the first game he injured it there, and it's just been kind of nagging him. You know, he still played well in spurts, but he hasn't shown that consistent power that he showed the past 2 seasons. So Jalen's rise to be starting running back, not, you know, on paper, but in number of snaps played, it's been huge for UTSA. I think he's generating about a yard and a half or 2 yards more per carry. And he's just a better fit for this offense, too. You know, moving to this pro-style offense, the running back have to make more reads. You know, in UTSA's previous spread system, essentially the running back is assigned a gap, and they're going to run to it, you know, whether they're running the read option or, you know, a zone play or whatever. But in this pro-style, you have to make more cutbacks, and you just have to have better vision. And I think that's where Jalen really exceeds. I mean, people forget that Jarvion didn't play running back in high school. So when he got to UTSA, he improved throughout the year. But Jalen has been playing this position his whole life. And, I mean, this was a guy, you know, whenever he was committed to Texas Tech. And whenever Tommy Tuberville left to Cincinnati, they pulled his offer. Ended up at UTSA. Tore his ACL twice. And, I mean, he's still the same player that was Big 12 worthy back in the day. And UTSA just stuck it out with him. And it's worked out.
Talking about Dalton Sturm a second ago, you know, I mentioned that the passing yards have not necessarily been there, but he hasn't had a lack of help from his receivers and his receiving corps, people out of the backfield as well. Total of 8 people that have 8 receptions or more. No one has more than 13. But just talk about how, you know, there's such a number of people that are able to contribute in this offense and how well they are doing, how much that has helped this offense progress.
Yeah, I think most UTSA fans really expected Jabryce Taylor to carry the torch of the wide receiver position this season. He hasn't done that so far. You know, he's had some key drops, and I think he's only averaging like maybe a catch or two or a game. So it's been huge that UTSA's wide receivers have been able to step up across the board. We've seen Josh Stewart come out of nowhere. He's leading the entire NCAA in yards per catch, I think at 29 yards per catch. Just an absolute deep threat. And, you know, this was a guy that was playing at a Division II school before his older brother, Kerry Thomas, came to UTSA. So it was completely unexpected. And for him to play that level is just hard to really understand. But here we are. And, you know, we've got great production out of the wide receivers as well. Marquez McNair, he was a late flip from Southern Miss to UTSA. He's played really well, albeit inconsistently. And Brady Jones, who is actually the brother-in-law of UTSA legend Eric Sosa, which I've learned recently, he's played extremely well at flat receiver as well. This is a really dependable option. So a lot of options for Dalton Sturm, and, you know, not a lot of receivers are on the field at one time since UTSA is running this pro-style offense, but the guys are making the most out of the snaps, and it's great to see the competition there.
Looking at the defense side of the ball, you know, 2 guys that always jump out to me, I'm looking at UTSA's defense, Michael Igawagu and Nate Gaines. Nate Gaines last year played backyard ball with Ryan Mitz. I mean, I was just
right.
I was crying up in that press box on that pitch, on the pig. But they're eating, of course, this year, combining for 70% of the tackles. Doing an article that I did on Frank Wilson yesterday, looking at what he's talking about, so many young players that they've infused and kind of they like their intangibles, talks about their length. We know all about Josiah Tofea. That's a guy that UTEP recruited as a defensive lineman. Sean Coogler spoke highly of him. Who are these young guys that are really stepping up and catching Frank Wilson's eye? Not only that, but playing within the scheme and turning what we always know as UTSA having a sound defense since you guys came into the conference. Who is making that happen once again in this first year of new head coaches and new schemes and new faces on that defensive side of the ball?
Well, there's a lot of them, actually. For how well UTSA's defense has played, it's kind of hard to believe that they're such a young unit. You know, they've got some junior and some senior leaders on there. But you look at a guy like Tedrick McGee. He's a cornerback from Memphis, late commitment. I mean, he's playing as a true freshman at cornerback, and he's just playing press coverage on every play. Real big guy, 6'1", 6'2", or so. He's just going to get better as he gets stronger. But, you know, he's going toe-to-toe with some of the best receivers in the conference. And he was manned up with a five-star receiver in the Arizona State game, and I think he only gave up, like, two catches, and both of which were either a one-hand catch or just, you know, a back corner fade. I mean, that guy's just doing a terrific job. It's great to see them recruit talent like that and then coach them up so they're ready to play at an early age. Well, on the defensive line, there's quite a few freshmen there as well. Eric Banks is another true freshman, also from Memphis. That guy is going to be a force to be reckoned with as he gets older. He played quarterback in high school, but he's 6'5", 230 or something like that. So once he learns the position, he's going to be really good. And we've seen the progression. He's playing more snaps every game. King Newton's a guy that's getting really good snaps at defensive tackle as well as Baylen Baker, who's actually the starter. Those guys have kind of started to phase out. A senior named Montrell King-Williams. So it's fun to watch that position improve. And then you've got guys like T.J. King, and I'm blanking out on the last defensive end, but, I mean, the majority of the players that are getting snaps on the defensive line are freshmen, and they've played really, really well. It's great stuff.
You also got Marcus Davenport that did it. I'm not sure if you measured him, but that kid's impressive to go on film and obviously in the stat sheet. But I wanted to pick your brain a little bit on Conference USA. The West Division, it'd be a stupid podcast question and lazily on my point to be like, well, how do you see it playing out? It's four teams tied for first place. When do you see this kind of forming? Is this something that's going to go down to the last week of the season, or do you, looking at schedules as you have, you know, or knowing team schedules coming, when do you think somebody's going to take charge of Conference USA West, or is it going to come down to the last week?
Man, I think it's going to come down to the last weekend, honestly. I mean, you've got four teams that are within striking distance, and all of them are playing solid football right now. So I really think, you know, we might be in a tiebreaker situation where it's going to go to a head-to-head record on the last weekend. It's going to be fun to follow. And you know, I don't think Conference USA West has had a season like that in years. I don't even think since UTSA has joined the division. So it's good to show this division can be just as competitive as the East as well.
Jared, as we always do, got to ask, what is your prediction for this weekend? Game time is 5 p.m. Mountain, if I'm not mistaken.
That should be right.
I'm inside. Stop
our hearts, bro. Do
it. Just do it, man. I got to ask.
I was getting so depressed listening to the podcast. When I caught on, y'all come off firing Coogler and moving down to FCS and all that. I'd be reconsidering my prediction. But, no, I think UTEP is going to come out and play a great game. I think Coogler is going to have the guys mentally prepared. I think he's going to shake off the losing record. And I think Metz is going to really come back. You know, I'm sure you guys remember he played a very terrible game against UTSA last year in a rain-soaked home game through four picks with a pick six. So I think he's going to come back and you know, put some respect on his name, so to speak. So I see him passing for, you know, a nice 200 yards or so. And I think UTEP's going to be recharged coming off the bye week. With that being said, I still think UTSA will pull it out. I have them winning, I think 24-17 is what I predicted earlier this week, and I think that sounds about right. You know, I think it's going to be relatively low scoring, a lot of defense, and, you know, there's a lot of run from Aaron Jones, and it's just going to be a typical UTEP-UTSA game. It's going to be very competitive, but I think the home team is finally going to take it this year for the first time in 4 years.
And you think it might be close too? That's what we're talking about earlier. But yeah, let the people know where they can find you, Jared. Find your work, your game previews coming up later this week as well.
Yeah, so you can find my work on underdogdynasty.com. We'll have the game preview there on Friday. And if you're trying to find me on Twitter, you can find me at JaredUTSA. I've got a great relationship with the UTEP fan base, so I'm always looking to add more more minor fans to the follow list.
Great follow, too.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
There you have it, Jared. Appreciate you, man. Enjoy the game this weekend. Enjoy the tailgate, and we'll at you soon, man.
Thanks, fellas. Will do. Y'all have a good one.
Jared Calmus from UnderdogDynasty.com, our fellow SB Nation sister. So, look,
the one thing that scared me when you said that they play press coverage on that outside, just from an X's and O standpoint, that's scary, man. But
that's the type of matchup that they're going to dare UTEP to beat them with the passing game.
Exactly. You know they got lane, too. I've watched three or four of their games. I know what you're talking about, too.
Off topic real quick. Have you seen Urias' move to first, bro?
Nah.
A buck and a half, bro. It's a buck and a half. You'll see it right now. I mean, they say that his leg doesn't cross the rubber, but to me it crosses. But anyway, that's off topic. Going back to what Jared said, I thought it was real interesting that he thinks it's going to be such a close game. You look at UTSA, they're not exactly a team that has put up a whole lot of points outside of that Southern Miss game. But they put up 55 at home against Southern Miss. If they can put up 55 points against Southern Miss, they can put up
60.
Look, I still have faith in this offense. I mean, this defense that we won't give up 60 points in a conference game. But still, I mean, I could see them putting up 30 to 40 points.
Yeah.
You know, and again, you know, we haven't really seen those slug it out games so much. Last year was kind of muddied and whatnot, like you talked about in the rain. He had the four picks and all that from Ryan Metz, but. Typically, you see the team once you take control and just kind of run away with it, and that's – I hate to say it, but that's what I expect this week. I really do. I mean, I've seen our offense struggle. I've seen because of our offensive struggles, our defensive struggles, and I just think, you know, this is a team in UTSA that is riding high right now. They're coming in off a pair of big wins. They're sitting at 2-1 in conference. They need this more than UTEP does in a sense. UTEP needs it because they need to figure out something with this season. They need to get something going right. But UTSA needs it because they're in the running for this thing in Conference USA.
Yeah.
You know, so they're at home. It's a game that they feel that
they're
can take care of business. It's their homecoming. I really feel like they're going to come out ready to play, and I'd be surprised if we kept it in the single digits. I really would.
Ooh.
I think it's going to be – a two touchdown win for them.
I really do.
I mean, it could be more. I mean, I don't think we're going to get beat by 30, you know, but I could see a 38-17 game or something, or you know, like I could see that happening because of what we've seen so far with this team. Hopefully, like he mentioned, Ryan Metz is back and that helps, you know. And yes, Sean Coogler has his team energized and ready to play, but I haven't seen that yet to be able to say we're going to make it a game. You know, we'll see what happens.
I kind of agree with Jared partially, but I'm still on your fence. And I even said it in the Q&A that I did with them. I just feel UTEP's ability. I think we've seen some type of growth in that front three, and I think as Jared mentioned, UTSA has been improving their pass rush. But I still think UTEP's 3-4 can give them some problems. Now, if Dalton Sturm is running all over us, oh god, it's gonna get ugly. But if they can contain him and just not allow those big runs from the two running backs, I think this is a game that they can stay in until the third quarter, but I still feel offensively there's going to be that big mistake or that low or those two or three. Well, we've seen in the second half, every time they come out of the second half, three or four times this year, it's two or three back-to-back three and outs. And there you go. And like we said, if they're not able to contain Dalton Sturm, this kid's going to break it. He proved it last year. He's proved it against teams this year. This kid can run the football. I'm really impressed with his ability to run the football, and we haven't been able to contain a quarterback.
Yeah, looking back, you know, starting in week one against with Tyler, was it Tyler
Rogers,
right? You know, that was a kid that could break the pocket, and he was picking up first downs like nothing against
him. Sturm is way more athletic and quicker than him, and that's going to be my key. But yeah, the reason why I think is because I really feel Aaron Jones is going to bust a couple of runs and keep UTEP in this game. I think that is why I think it's going to be a 14-14 game in the third quarter, and then they're going to get too reliant on Aaron Jones. UTSA is going to stack the box. There's that mistake. UTSA goes and scores. 24-14 game turns into a 28-14 game, a 27-14 game. That's how I see it going. But I really feel the adjustments that they made with the competitiveness, with just bringing that fire back and playing football. You know what I mean? Just playing football during that bye week and to start this week and getting back to that competitive juices, maybe that is good for a solid start in the first half.
All right. All that said, give me your prediction.
28-14 UTSA. Yeah. I think I was like 24 or something or 13, but I think Jones breaks too, but Dalton Sturm's going to have a big game against us.
I'm going to do 34-17. 34-17 is my pick, and that's UTEP, of course, winning. No, I'm just kidding. It's UTSA. Yeah, I just think, you know, you look at the numbers on defense. UTSA is a team that ranks in the top 50 in defense, and I think in rushing defense, if I'm not mistaken. So they're a team that's done well.
And they got against the run.
They do have depth. What's funny is coming into this season, we were talking about UTSA like it was a rebuilding year and it was going to be tough for them. And
Especially on defense.
And they had lost so many seniors. And, yeah, well, that's not the case. They're doing well. They're 3-3, but they're 2-1 in conference, and they're coming into a game against UTEP that should be winnable.
A couple minutes away, they could be 4-2.
They really could. That ASU game was one that they could have won. And, you know, you look at Old Dominion, CSU, Colorado State, they were in both those games. So
Colorado State.
This is a team that is playing pretty well right now. They're at home. They need to win. I mean, 34-17 is where I'm going to put it, and I think that's just because of that defense. I think they have a defense that maybe Aaron Jones gets one. I just don't see the UTEP offense being able to put – you know, you look back even at, like, the La Tech game, you know, where UTEP had some success. We were only able to put up 7 points through three quarters, and we finally got us – you know, I just can't see us – you know, I can't see us putting up 30 points or 28 points. I just can't. So I just don't think that we have the ability to win this game.
Only way I think – the only way I've seen UTEP score this year is Aaron Jones run.
Exactly.
I think he's good for at least two in this game. We got some basketball this weekend that I'm kind of – I actually postponed this. I was going to go to San Antonio, but for some reason I wanted to watch the scrimmage more. I don't know why, but we're going to talk about it. Orange and white scrimmage. Still haven't seen a roster, but we do know – well, hold up. Before we go into the scrimmage, Tim Floyd – has been recruiting a lot.
I know.
And
for all the shit I've talked about Tim Floyd, look, and I still feel the same, but I text you today. I said, look, I'll even read you all the texts just to, you know, put it out there, because I do give credit where credit's due, okay? I told Alex, I said, I'll give Tim Floyd this one thing. The dude continues to get good talent to come play for him, even if he underproduces. And it's the truth. You know, you look at these guys. This is a guy that committed today. He was a guy that was committed to Ole Miss, a Power 5 school, or whatever it is, Power 5, who cares?
The Overlords.
The Overlords. He was committed to the Overlords, and you know, Tim Floyd got him. You know, and this is a guy that if he left his recruiting open a little longer, it would probably continue to pick up a few offers.
Average a double-double as a junior.
Yeah,
averaging
16 and 10, 16 and 11
if you're in the rounding up.
This guy, you know, Tim Floyd, he continues to pick up talent. The one thing that's interesting, though, is that you look at the roster and how many people are supposed to graduate.
What I've been told, there's only two scholarships available for next year.
So you've already got four people.
My favorite guy, Roger Williams. I mean, and this kid, too, this Tyler Smith kid is very talented. A lot of places you're going to look.
I think I'm going to need another beer.
A lot of places you look in Tyrus Smith, they have him at 6'6", 170, 6'6", 190. He tweeted at us that he's a legit 230. And, you know, he's a lengthy, long cat, and that Roger Williams has that girth to him. You know, it's kind of interesting. It's just real interesting because somebody's going to be a Prop 48. Now, not only do you have five commits, but you also have Trey Wade, who's on campus, Prop 48ing. I've heard a lot of good things about that kid, too. And so now you've got six guys pretty much committed for next year's roster that we know of. Somebody is going to have to take a red or a gray shirt. In my opinion, I look at Ladarius Brewer as being kind of a candidate. He's the guard commit. I think you're going to see him. Or he's kind of like a combo guard, too. He can play four, too.
These guys have to know the numbers when they commit. You know what I'm saying?
Because you got two point guards committing. You got basically three swingmen with Roger Williams and Smith and Ladarius Brewer. Plus, you got another two guard. Like, you're right, dude.
You have to know the numbers when you're committing, right? Like, you have to know this team only has two people graduating. You know, you already have four people committed. So right there, the numbers don't jive. And now you're committing. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I mean, great. But it just goes back to the way Tim Floyd's run his program since day one, with people coming and going, like whatever.
He's preparing for something, right?
He obviously knows right now, in my opinion, more than the whole Prop 48 thing. Maybe my Cowboys hat on. I think better when I've got my star on my head. You know, besides the whole Prop 48 thing, like, he's got to know that there's probably going to be some defections. Or, I mean, how many offers does he still have out there?
A fuckload.
Seriously. Like, it's crazy, man.
Let's look. Verbal commit. 2017 high school.
You know, you got to give Tim Floyd credit. I don't know what he's doing to get these guys to commit like this, but you've got some serious talent that continues to commit. We haven't seen it just yet translate to on-court success, and hopefully this will be the year, but I don't think it will be. But, you know, I just...
Now, the most interesting thing, though, coming up is who signs in November. I mean, it's one thing to be committed.
It's one thing to commit, yeah.
And we all know that. I mean, we all know. I mean,
even when you sign.
Yeah. You're going to go there. Low blow to everybody. Low blow to everybody once again. We don't want to take it in. The Sharks, is that what Floyd said? But, man, like, that's going to be real interesting to see this early signing period of who. Because that's, I mean, that's when you know who's locked in, either grades-wise and, of course, being here at UTEP. It's, I mean, you see it nowadays where these kids want to be committed. They want to get the love on Twitter from the people. You know what I mean? All that love that comes with it, the articles, the interviews. I mean, it's addictive. So you see these kids flip-flop. You don't know where their mind is when they're flip-flopping. But we'll know who signs. I think Kobe McGee signs, the kid from San Antonio. He's been committed for a long time, came on his visit. Maybe Evan Gilliard, the point guard, commits. And probably the guy I see not signing right away is Roderick Williams. Just off the top of the dome. No, just guessing, throwing names out there, giving you a sports talk radio show. That's the only guy I can think that can maybe hold off until the spring, because this is a JUCO guy that's very athletic. He's playing in California, in the California JUCO League. He's going to get looked at. That could be a guy that you might watch out for in terms of a flip from just a bigger offer, nothing that maybe Tim Floyd doesn't do, but it's just going to be really interesting to see who signs and if anybody signs in this early period. And also, too, the big question that I'm going to find out tomorrow, I'm getting to the bottom of this, is this because they know something's up with Isaiah Osborne and they're preparing for something? You know what I mean? There's just so many questions.
I've been skeptical on that move since day one. You know that much. Yeah. I haven't thought that he's going to be available. I mean, of course, we're talking 2017 here, so he should be available regardless by then.
Yeah.
But then again, you don't know what Isaiah Osborne's path takes if he can't play.
Yeah.
You know, if they start to make a mess of this and they start, we saw what happened with McSwiggin.
Exactly. You know, that's exactly what I'm.
You started to see how they wanted to declare him ineligible, and so you don't know how things are going to play out. But again, you would assume that Osborne would be available for 2017, if not this year. That's something to talk about, though, man. Let's move on. Let's talk about that scrimmage coming up this weekend. Is Osborne playing that?
I think he can. He's in the dunk contest. But I got a good question. I got a good question from Twitter from Lutet Miner, and I think this is a very legit question to look at this scrimmage with. You got a lot of bodies. You got a lot of bodies. Did you hear about Matt Williams back in the boot? I just pissed him off. Damn.
I didn't hear that, man.
Yeah, supposedly I heard some people told me, some media sources told me that it was a sprain. So we ain't getting to see Matt Williams on the floor on Saturday. So I'll crack
what talks about beer. That is, yeah, I mean, is it a sprain or is it like a legitimate what do you call it? This, you know, flaming up or whatever, and re-aggravation of this injury that he's carried. Because we talked about that, man. With big men, you just don't know. It's so hard. You look at Greg Oden, man. Greg Oden, college beast, you know, unstoppable. Comes into NBA and they can't stay healthy, man. Injury after injury after injury, and it just happens with these big guys. And so, yeah, that scares me a lot, man. Because I would expect Tim Floyd to put out there that it's a sprained ankle or something.
But he hasn't.
Regardless.
But he hasn't.
See, I'm just saying, though, like even if any coach leaked it to any media source or whatever, you know, I would think that they'd be saying, say it's a sprain. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to come out and say, oh, he has another stress fracture or there's a slight break.
It's not good. Whatever. Yeah, like, I agree. I'm just
– Let me ask you something. How many times you sprained your ankle and got yourself a boot?
Like 3-4 times.
It must have been some bad sprains.
Yeah.
For him, that's even worse.
Oh.
You know?
Especially if it's in the same foot. But anyway, going back to what Lutep asked, with all these bodies, I mean, how would you divide this? Would you go Omega, Dominic on one team? Would you split them up? If you're Tim Floyd, would you be trying to build chemistry or just let these guys compete and put on a show and basically see who can ball? Put Deion Barrett against an Omega Harris. Put Deion Barrett against Artis. Put Trey Touchette against Artis. Or put, you know, how would you mix it up? Would you try chemistry-wise, or would you just let them go at it?
You could argue it both ways. You know, you could argue that the team could be improved both ways because in one sense, yes, like if you put Dominic and Omega on the same side, then they get that chemistry. They get to play together. But at the same time, you're going up against quote-unquote lesser opponents.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking about freshman guys that have
one versus really, two.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and not that these guys aren't going to be good and not that they don't have talent, but it's different, you know. So they could get – a completely different level of experience by playing against each other, you know, and having real competition against each other rather than just going up against Dominic Artis against this freshman that's coming in or this red shirt or whatever it is, you know. So I think you could argue it both ways. I think it depends on what they're going for, man. Like if you ask me what you should do, I think you should probably get them both together so they get that experience of playing together. If you ask me what they're going to do, I'd probably say they're going to split them up because they want more of a show for the fans.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's what this has become. That's what it is across college basketball. When you talk about these opening scrimmages, you know, it's all about a show. It's all about getting fans out there and letting them see the team.
Up,
yeah, that's
quote
all
unquote.
It's about. So you don't want to see them put the ones versus the twos and one team wins by 30 points. You know, you
and
want
they've
to see,
they've been competitive games.
Yeah. So if you ask me what I think they're going to do, I think they're going to go ahead and split them up pretty evenly.
So what are you looking for in this? I mean, what are you looking for? Are you looking? I mean, because it's kind of the same thing. Like it's kind of like we talk about with football when you're going minor on minor, and especially these controlled, glorified pickup games, if you will. Even though there's going to be referees and clocks, I mean, are you looking for somebody we haven't seen before, kind of do something we haven't seen before, or would you rather see more consistency from artists when? Harris, these guys.
Honestly, I don't expect anything out of these games, man.
Nah.
Nothing. It's a show. Like I said, it's a show. It's a show for the fans. You come into the exhibition games that we're going to be playing. I don't even know who we're playing this year. Northwest, Southwest, Eastern, Oklahoma, or something
South,
like
South,
that.
Southwest.
You know, that's when you start to say, okay, what do you want to see? But in these games, I don't expect anything. I really don't. Like, you know, you're going to have a lot of guys. And the problem is you have guys that want to – play into that show. You know what I mean? Like the players, they want to
talk about that.
The players, they want to show off for the fans. They want to have, you look at the NBA All-Star game. You know what I'm saying? And everybody's out there just like almost letting people score. Well, in the NBA, they do. But you know what I'm saying? Like they're trying to show off a little bit. They're trying to show what they quote unquote can do. I don't know, man. I don't expect too much out of this game. I'd like to see some of these young kids not be afraid of the bright lights and come out and knock down some shots, you know, knock down some open threes, start to get a feel for who's got that shot.
Make a layup.
You know?
Just make a layup.
Yeah, that too. No, but, you know, start to see who maybe might be a dark horse contender to be the X factor off the bench, you know, a guy that you wouldn't expect, but could come in and knock down a three off the bench or something, you know, just things like that, little things. Like, what you've seen out of Omega, what you've seen out of Dominic, like you're not gonna see more from those guys in this type of game. You know what I mean? Like
we'll talk in January about those guys.
Yeah.
That's like the ultimate. Yeah, I agree. I want to see guys like a Tim Cameron come off the bench and take somebody baseline and finish a layup. Like I want to see those guys that I just want to see something that we didn't have last year. Guys that can finish around the rim, guys that can make shots consistently, and somebody I want to see a little bit of defense too. If this is a Tim Floyd coach team, you know that he's tries to get away from the showboat of the game, but can't control the players all the way. But I do want to see some decent man-to-man battles, at least. I want to see better footwork. I want to see shots contested. And hey, plus if the guy on the other side makes it too. But you're right. You're not going to see the full onslaught of this team, but I want to see how this athleticism could possibly be molded because there's some athleticism out there. There definitely is some athleticism. So to see it on floor right in front of me. Definitely excited about it as Anthony Slotin.
You see it on the floor right in front of you, but what about this hat right in front of you? What do you think about that? The
Dallas Cowboys.
All my Cowboy fans out there, all my brothers in Cowboy Nation.
The Dallas Cowboy fans everywhere have 15-inch cocks right now.
That's one way of putting it. Oh, man. Yeah, man. There's only so much to be said about this scrimmage, man. It's a show, but – you know, you hope that these guys can come out and put on that show, and the younger kids can not be afraid of these bright lights and be able to come out and knock down some shots and be at home in a 12,000-seat arena. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of these kids, they play in high school and they come from smaller towns, man. They don't play in front of 12,000 people. They don't play in UTEP struggle. We're still going to put 8,000-9,000 people in that stadium. So you don't see people play – you don't see these guys play in front of those types of crowds. So – you know, they get an opportunity to come out. There may not be 8,000 this game, obviously, maybe 1,500, 2,000. But still, like, to see them in this on this floor, you know, be able to come out and knock down some threes, knock down some shots, and just kind of get accustomed to how things work, that's all you can ask for. Moving forward, though, it's just nice to see a basketball hitting that wood floor, man, because it's been a rough time on the gridiron, man. It's been rough,
to say the least. And I mean, I don't know. This weekend is usually a weekend, you know, football. It's never really been excited about it, but there's just a weird feeling about this basketball team. Like, you don't know what to expect. You don't even know what to expect on Saturday. I mean, it's just a awkward time. But
the good thing is, you know, I feel like as UTEP fans, every year is the year. every year is the year. Like, I feel like for the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years in basketball, I could have said, this is the year. Same thing with football. You know, we come in with Kugler. Aaron Jones is back, and this is it. We're going to, you know, and it never happens. It never happens. And this year in basketball is different because it's not the year for us. Like, we're really thinking, like, oh, man, I don't know what we're going to do. I don't know where this team's going to be at. It's a rebuilding year. But maybe they come out and surprise. Maybe they come out of surprise. And so that's why it's kind of nice. In a way, it's kind of refreshing to just have a year where you don't expect anything from this team and maybe you get surprised. Maybe. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but maybe.
That's how it happened to UAB a couple years ago.
That's right. NCAA tournament. That's right.
But anyways, so Saturday is
Let's talk about this just real quick. You got a football coach who made a three-year plan to turn things around, who's now in year four.
And that year three, this is the third year. He said it after signing day of 2014.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I thought that was year one signing day.
That was after they got mobbed. Yeah.
Regardless, you know where we're at with that. And then you got a basketball coach who's underperformed every single year. So what do you make of all this?
I'm going to counter with, you have an athletic director that's 71 years old, two, does not have a contract signed to after this year. Three, I've told this to a couple of people. I'm chilling after the game waiting for the presser, and I see Bob Stoll just kind of chilling.
Yeah.
After they got beat by FIU, like, not really looking, you know, stressed. I see other people looking stressed and pissed. I think the bigger question is, is Bob Stoll coming back? Because I think he's ready to ride off in this. I think we've talked about it a couple of times on here where they're trying to fundraise for that South End Zone project. I think that's his parting shot. I really think that could be his parting shot whether it takes until next August to do it, the man isn't under a contract. And talking with Steve Kaplowitz, what up, Cappy? He talked about he's done 2-year deals, just 2-year deals. Well, this year he hasn't re-upped a deal. And like I said, he's 71. Yeah, I mean, he's still in good shape, but, I mean, he's been in the business for a while. As a coach, I just feel in my mind that he's ready to ride. And that's cool. That's cool. But that's the bigger question is, where is the direction of the guy making those calls going to be at? Because I think Kugler walks on his own if this shit show doesn't turn around. And I think Floyd stays as long as he wants. But whoever comes in –
and where do you go with it? Like, what if let's just say he walks, where do you go with it? Who do you go after? Like, what type of person do you go after?
I think you got to go after That's not fair, but not yet. I think you got to go with the obvious. You look at what New Mexico State's done, and with a young athletic director, somebody that has that fire, that's gonna take risks, that's gonna take calculated risks.
Could Sean Coogler be an AD?
That's a good question. I think he could, because he's a structure. I mean, you see how he dissects everything. And like I said, he's a real guy. There's coach speak, and then there's Coogler just being a real motherfucker. And I respect the hell out of that as somebody that's trying to do a job in the media and describe your team to people. And the way he's structured, I mean, that's a cheap bet if Dr. N wants to really go cheap and be like, you know what? Well, that's his promoter. Or hold up. I'm going to make you shit yourself.
No, don't do it.
I'm going to make you shit yourself.
Don't do it, bro.
What about Michael Price?
Oh, I thought about that. I thought you were going to say Tim Floyd or something.
Nah, hell
no. I'm like, don't even think about that. No. Mike Price before, man, and I mean, I don't even. Last I heard, Mike Price was still in town.
Yeah, he comes. He's probably chilling. He probably has a crib here. He's probably traveling.
I think what you lack though with Mike Price is that structure.
Yeah,
because Mike Price was a very laid back guy, I think that's what helped his teams be successful, because he wasn't as disciplined with them.
Yeah.
And when you get to this level, it's a fine line. Look, when you've got the top athletes in the country, you're able to be disciplined with these guys. You're able to be like, this is how it's going to be, because there's another guy behind you that's going to take your job. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But when you're at UTEP, it's a lot harder to be like that, because are you going to bench me, coach? You know what I'm saying? And so when Mike Price came in, he let these guys just go out there and have fun and play. And he wasn't worried about, I mean, you're talking about a guy that got caught at a strip club, bro. Like running up a tab on the university card at a strip club. You know, how disciplined can you expect these people
for
to be?
Real,
but it
for
helped
real.
The team. Like, these guys were able to go out there and just have fun and play the game. And I think that works at a place like this. But when it comes to being an athletic director, you need that backbone.
The hammer.
You need that. Yeah, you need to be that hammer, because there's got to be somebody like what coach is going to be scared to answer to Mike Price?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you've got to have some kind of fear in your coaches that your job is.
And Bob doesn't have he's too cool. He's too kind. And that's not attacking him, but that's just how he is. That's not his character, but that's really, I'm telling you, just keep an eye on that. Like everybody, keep an eye on Bob Stoll at the end of this year. I don't got no basis off this. I'm just saying, dude, 71. He's had I would say that he's had a pretty distinguished career. You know, obviously the last 7-8 years here at UTEP haven't been the rosiest, you know, in terms of on-field success. But I mean, the guy went and made himself a career, and I think he's 1 foot out the door, man. That's my opinion. But that's a bigger question there. That's something that we'll definitely keep an eye on. The rest of the season.
Real quick, let's run down these Conference USA power rankings. It's actually interesting, man, because, you know, up top, it's not as clear anymore as it was a few weeks back. Like, a few weeks back, you really knew.
Who'd you put number one?
I actually didn't vote this week. I'm confessing that. First week, I haven't voted in a really long time, and I'm kind of out of tune right now, man. And it's tough. It was a tough week to vote because – you know, you've got Western Kentucky, who's now 4-3. You've got Louisiana Tech, who's now 4-3. You've got Middle Tennessee, 4-2, coming off that loss to Western Kentucky. It's such a jumble up top now. Like, everybody's 2-1. Look at that. You've got of the top six teams, five of them are 2-1.
Four of those are in Conference USA. What?
You know, Old Dominion, who's at number five, is the only team that doesn't have a loss in Conference USA. You know,
FIU is undefeated.
True, at number 7, 3-0, most wins in conference.
Conference USA is a clusterfuck, is that what you're trying to say?
These last 2 weeks, it really did. But running down them real quick, Western Kentucky still holding in that top spot, 181 total points, 9 first place votes. They knocked off Middle Tennessee 44-43 this past week in double overtime.
That was a damn good game.
Good game, man. They got Old Dominion this week, and we'll find out if Old Dominion's for real. I don't know that they can beat Western Kentucky, but I've said that before and I was wrong, so we'll see what happens. Louisiana Tech comes in at number 2, and they had 6 first place votes, 4-3 also, 2-1.
I voted
conference.
On number 1.
56-28 at UMass, and that was a game that we talked about. You know, we said this will be a game where they need to take care of business.
And it was close in the third quarter, too. It was a one-score game in the third quarter, and they opened it up. Do you see the receivers' numbers? 12 catches, 326 yards, 5 TDs. Carlos Henderson, ladies and gentlemen.
I was going to say, was that Julio Jones or – They have FIU on the road this weekend. That'll be a chance for FIU to really establish themselves as a top team in this conference if they are. I mean, if they beat, granted, it's at home, so they've got that upper hand there. But if they beat Louisiana Tech, this is a team that's going to vault right up into that top spot. Middle Tennessee comes in at number 3, 4-2, also 2-1 on the season in Conference USA. They just lost to Western Kentucky.
Missed
the
extra point.
They're at Missouri this weekend. Southern Miss comes in at number 4 now, 4-3. They're on a bye. They just lost to LSU, 45-10. Old Dominion's now coming off a bye at 4-2, 2-0, and like we said, at Western Kentucky. UTSA against UTEP. Man, I just every time I see the name UTEP, I'm just like,
God be with the Miners.
God be with the Miners, indeed. You know, UTSA 3-3, 2-1. They're coming off that win over Rice, so they're riding high a little bit.
And they still got North Texas and Charlotte.
That's a team that could really make some noise out here, man. That's a team that really could. FIU coming in 3-4, 3-0 in conference. They're against La Tech, as we talked about. North Texas is a team that has climbed out of that cellar, bro.
I don't know what to make of them.
3-3, 2-1.
They battled
on a bye. And then they got Army, who we saw what Army did to. But, I mean, if they can even make it a game against Army, that's going to say a lot for this team. So we'll see what happens. Marshall is now down to number 9. Well, they were at 9 last week, but they have dropped considerably.
When was the last time Marshall was lower than, like, 3 in our –
It's got to be at least, like, 6 years. Because they've been at the top of the league, you know, for at least 4 or 5 years. So it's got to be way back when. But they come in at number 9. They've got a game against Charlotte this weekend, so they'll hopefully be able to rebound for them. Charlotte comes in at number 10 now, 2-5, 1-2. FAU number also tied number 10. And UTEP, damn, 12.
Ain't nobody voting the first this week, bro. I put them 12. I think that's exactly where I had them. I had them 12. That's exactly where I had them.
Rice comes in at number 13.
How far
are we falling from putting people number 1 down to number 12, man?
No bueno.
I feel like we just ended on like a complete low note. Like it just buzzkill, bro. Number 12, bro. Number 12. But you know what?
Let that sink in.
Look, maybe, like Jared mentioned, you know, Sean Kugler have this team ready to play and they'll make a game of it and have a chance to win. Like, that's really all you can ask for, right?
UTEP,
in a game like this.
And UTEP's undefeated and haven't been scored on the Alamo Dome. So
that's true. That is true. 1-0. 33-0, right?
34. Jimmy, shout out to Jimmy Musgrave with that pick 6. Almost had me cheering in the press box.
Oh, man. Well, there y'all have it. Another episode of the Rush Podcast in the books. Y'all know where to find us, sbnminorrush@gmail.com, at sbnminorrush on Twitter, facebook.com/minorrush. What's your Twitter, man? Let everybody know what your Twitter is.
Nicholas Alex 915.
Y'all don't even know what mine is because I don't even get on there very rarely. But
I only tweet high school football.
Y'all know where to find us. Always chime in, call in, let us know what you want to hear, talk about. If you want to help out with the Rush, let us know.
Peace.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.